with the existent, the focal point of fascist propaganda. Page 135. This may explain why ultra-reactionary mass movements, such the psychology of the masses, to a much greater extent than do movements which show more faith in the masses. However, there is no doubt that even the most progressive political movement can deteriorate to the level of the psychology of the crowd and its manipulation, if its own irrational content is shattered through the reversion to blind power. The so-called psychology of fascism is largely engendered by manipulation. Rationally calculated techniques bring about what is naively regarded as the natural irrationality of masses. This insight may help us to solve the problem of whether fascism as a mass phenomenon can be explained at all in psychological terms. While there certainly exists potential susceptibility for fascism among the masses, it is equally certain that the manipulation of the unconscious, the kind of suggestion explained by Freud in genetic terms, is indispensable for actualization of this potential. This, however, corroborates the assumption that fascism as such is not a psychological issue, and that any attempt to understand its roots and its historical role in psychological terms still remain on the level of ideologies, such as the one of irrational forces promoted by fascism itself. Also, the fascist agitator doubtlessly takes up certain tendencies within those he addresses. He does so as the mandatory of powerful economic and political interests. Psychological dispositions do not actually cause fascism. Rather, fascism defines a psychological area which can be successfully exploited by the forces which promote it for entirely non-psychological reasons of self-interest. What happens when masses are caught by fascist propaganda is not a spontaneous primary expression of instincts and urges, but a quasi-scientific revitalization of their psychology, the artificial regression described by Freud in his discussion of organized groups. The psychology of the masses has been taken over by their leader and transformed into a means for their domination. It does not express itself directly through mass movements. This phenomenon is not entirely new, but was foreshadowed through the counter-revolutionary movements of history. Far from being the source of fascism, psychology has become one element among others in a superimposed system, the very totality of which is necessitated by the potential of mass resistance, the masses' own rationality. The content of Freud's theory, the replacement of individual narcissism by identification with leader images, points in the direction of what might be called the appropriation of mass psychology by the oppressors. Page 136. To be sure, this process has a psychological dimension, but it also indicates a growing tendency towards the abolition of psychological motivation in the old liberalistic sense. Such motivation is systematically controlled and absorbed by social mechanisms which are directed from above. When the leaders become conscious of mass psychology and take it into their own hands, it ceases to exist in a certain sense. This potentiality is contained in the basic construct of psychoanalysis, inasmuch as for Freud, the concept of psychology is essentially a negative one. He defines the realm of psychology by the supremacy of the unconscious and postulates that what is id should become ego. the emancipation of man from the heteronomish role of his unconscious would be tantamount to the abolition of his psychology. Fascism further this abolition in the opposite sense through the perpetuation of dependence instead of the realization of potential freedom through expropriation of the unconscious by social control instead of making the subject conscious of their unconsciousness. For while psychology always denotes some bondage of the individual, it also presupposes freedom in the sense of a certain self-sufficiency and autonomy of the individual. It is not accidental that the 19th century was the great era of psychological thought. In a thoroughly reified society in which there are virtually no direct relationships between men, in which each person has been reduced to a social atom, to a mere function of collectivity, the psychological processes, though they still persist in each individual, have ceased to appear as the determining forces of the social process. Thus, the psychology of the individual has lost what Hegel would have called its substance. It is perhaps the greatest merit of Freud's book that though he restricted himself to the field of individual psychology and wisely abstained from introducing sociological factors from outside, he nevertheless reached the turning point where psychology abdicates. The psychological impoverishment of the subject that surrendered itself to the object, which it has substituted for its most important constituent. Footnote 37, text. That is, the superego anticipates almost with clairvoyance the post-psychological de-individualized social atoms which form the fascist collectivities. In these social atoms, the psychological dynamics of group formation have overreached themselves and are no longer a reality. The category of phoniness applies to the leaders as well as to the act of identification on the part of the masses and their supposed frenzy and hysteria. Just as little as people believe in the depth of their heart that the Jews are the devil, do they completely believe in the leader? Page 137. They do not really identify themselves with him, but act this identification, perform their own enthusiasm, and thus participate in their leader's performance. It is through this performance that they strike a balance between their continuously mobilized instinctual urges and the historical stage of enlightenment they have reached and which cannot be revoked arbitrarily. It is probably this suspicion of this fictitiousness of their own group psychology which makes fascist crowds so merciless and unapproachable. If they would stop to reason for a second, the whole performance would go to pieces and they would be left to panic. Freud came upon this element of phoniness within an unexpected context, namely, when he discussed hypnosis as a retrogression of individuals to the relation between primal herd and primal father. As we know from other reactions, individuals have preserved a variable degree of personal aptitude for reviving old situations of this kind. Some knowledge that in spite of everything hypnosis is only a game, a deceptive renewal of these old impressions, may, however, remain behind and take care that there is a resistance against any too serious consequences of the suspension of the will in hypnosis. Footnote 38, text. In the meantime, this game has been socialized and the consequences have proved to be very serious. Freud made a distinction between hypnosis and group psychology by defining the former as taking place between two people only. However, the leaders' appropriation of mass psychology, the streamlining of their technique, has enabled them to collecticize the hypnotic spell. The Nazi battle cry of Germany Awake hides its very opposite. The collectivization and institutionalization of the spell, on the other hand, have made the transference more and more indirect and precarious, so that the aspect of performance, the phoniness of enthusiastic identification, and of all the traditional dynamics of group psychology have been tremendously increased. This increase may well terminate in sudden awareness of the untruth of the spell and eventually in its collapse. Socialized hypnosis breeds within itself the forces which will do away with the spook of regression through remote control, and in the end awaken those who keep their eyes shut, though they are no longer asleep.